This is Friends of History Debating Society. I'm John Batchelor, Professor H.J. Mackinder of International Relations. And we're speaking of Russia, but Russia now, with the remarks by Vladimir Putin, the president of the Russian Federation, about what the professor introduces to me as Eurasianism, a philosophy of the heartland, the pivot nation. However, Professor, I'm reading a new book, Stalin's War, by a professor who has identified the Lenin-Stalin idea of how to face the world. And it's simple enough. They believe that setting the imperial powers against each other would strengthen the Soviet Union. They would triumph. They observed this. Lenin in particular observed that only the first war and the destruction of Germany and Austria and France and Britain, the young people of those countries, made the conditions possible for the Soviet Union to rise, for Marxist-Leninism to triumph. So their imagination, this is Putin, this is Lenin in 1920, he's dead in 24, Stalin takes it over, is to set the imperial powers, the capitalist states, against each other. That seems out of date now when we discuss modern Russia. First of all, what is your opinion of that measure of Stalin and inheriting from Lenin, that Stalin toyed with the Germans, Stalin toyed with the French, Stalin toyed with the Japanese, Stalin toyed with the Americans, who built much of his heavy industrial base for him in the 1930s, and then Stalin set himself as an ally of Germany, then switched sides and was an ally of the U.S., always taking advantage of the imperial powers or the capitalist states, thinking that just a little more generosity towards Stalin and he will be a recognizable market for our goods. What is your opinion of that? And is that distinct from how Vladimir Putin sees the world? Is that distinct from how the Russian Federation sees the world?
Well, I think that's an absolutely excellent point. I think that, of course, Stalin was not Russian at all. He was Georgian. And he knew German, so he understood German philosophy and so forth. Lenin was half nomad of some kind, but neither of them is in any sense rooted in Russia, in Russian culture. Russian culture is what they seek to destroy, and they did a heck of a job. So what we're seeing now is that Putin understands that to rule Russia or to have a place in the world, one has to not simply keep the others fighting each other, but rather one has to present a vision of Russia as a coherent and fundamentally benign culture, which is distinct both to the East Asian cultures and to the ultra-competitive cultures of Western Europe and the United States, and that therefore offers a framework for the organization of a polity in the heart of Eurasia, leaving the edges, the rims, to China and Western Europe, that will be based on this principle of community, of subordinate, as it's called, and that will be respectable philosophically. And I think, frankly, that makes a lot of sense. If I were a Russian, I would try to build a modern Russia on historically Russian foundations. And everything that Putin is talking about is from the great Russian tradition. He's not invoking Lenin or Stalin or any Germans in this at all. What strikes me here is that, as the late Professor Jim Billington, Librarian of Congress and Russian specialist, said, that this concept of Eurasianism is being embraced by members both of the Russian intellectual elite and by large numbers of Russians in the street as an answer to the question, who are we? Who or who should we be? Therefore, we should take this very seriously.
Is it too much to say that Putin would reject, if asked today, Stalin's opinion that we have to set the capitalists against each other, Stalin's opinion that we must destroy elements of our culture in order to concentrate power in my hands and have grain to sell overseas so we can buy weapons, so we can aggrandize ourselves and wait until the imperial powers are exhausted before we take back the parts of the Russian Empire that were picked off by the imperialists after the Russian Revolution. Is it too much to say that Putin would reject all of that?
I'm not sure exactly how Putin would say it, but he has a tendency to describe theories like that as outdated, inappropriate for modern times, not useful today. And he devotes some attention in the speech to the fact that the last thing we want is more destruction ahead. And the core idea of this subornist unity, sort of organic union, is that people who disagree are reconciled by concentrating on what they agree about. And it's not a kind of militaristic solution, a la Soviet Union or China, but it is a spiritual solution. I mean, he talks about people like Berdyaev and so forth. So he's, in his own way, getting into the mainstream of Russian philosophical and political thought, which is unfamiliar to most people outside of Russia, but from which inevitably must come the form of a new Russia. They're not going to change and say, well, let's make Russia into England or something like that. They're saying, what is the essence of Russianness? And they see Russianness as being very inclusive. Putin is speaking against nations. He's talking about cultures. He's saying that the world is going to be organized by cultures.
Is he comfortable with Germany, with the German culture? He speaks German. I know that. He was trained as a KGB officer in East Germany. What is his attitude?
Well, he has a fair amount to say about Stalin's policies toward Germany back and forth, but he tries to say, what he ends up saying is that Germany and Russia were, and Stalin, Hitler and Stalin were each to blame for this. Whether he is a Germanophile or not is hard to tell, but my feeling is that he doesn't stress the idea of the Germans as an enemy, but I can't help thinking, as I ask, how is it that Putin has sticks on to Eurasianism, thinking, well, the first Slavophiles come after Napoleon's conquest, but Gumilyov and the contemporary Slavophiles, they're products of two invasions by Germany in World War I and in World War II. And that there is still tremendous reverberations going on in Russia about that. And how do you create a Russian state that is going to be autonomous and it's going to be safe from all of those things, not least because of its great size and its cultural profundity?
A final consideration. I told the anecdote about Putin concerned about his health. One way this was expressed as to me is that the reason he has so many guards around him and the reason all the caution is that if anything happens to him, the state falls apart. One man holds it all together. Is that an exaggeration, or is that what it looks like to you, that he's a tsar figure?
I think it is an exaggeration. I think that Russia has a constitutional structure that's in place, and there are people in the offices and there are people in the parliament and all the rest. Putin works his way around it by criminality and deception. Whereas if you compare that to China, China has no government at all. Governance is directly criminality and deception. So I think when Putin goes that they are not, I don't think the state's going to fall apart. It may be readjusted because he has flouted the Constitution for so long. But the Constitution that's there is actually pretty good, and it can be followed.
Are we going to get a Nikita Khrushchev 1956 speech about Putin? Is that imaginable? You just suggested so much as much to me when the way you put that.
Oh my goodness! I don't. I think not. First, because Khrushchev was one off. Second, Putin is certainly no Stalin, although he's not an appealing character. But Stalin was really something quite unusual. And finally, because I think that what the Russians want to do, they don't want. Khrushchev was basically saying something terrible has gone wrong for this whole period, and we've got to fix it. What I think the Russians want now is somebody to come in and say, well, look, we had some problems under Putin, but look, we're emerged with, our energy supplies and all the rest. And we're going to keep pushing this development of a Russia that is part of the modern world, but remains Russia. It's not going to be dominated by anything from outside. Nor is she going to seek to dominate anything except that which is naturally part of her sphere. Now, of course, that's where the problems arise, because where do we draw the lines?
Professor H.J. McIndoe, International Relations. This is Friends of History Debating Society. I'm John Batchelor.